It was like a fire ignited inside me. I knew I had to do it.
The end of the story, it's yourself, the most severe judge of what you are doing.
What does it mean to go beyond, to go further than expected, to raise the bar, to defy limits?
In this podcast series, we unleash the game-changing stories that take Lamborghini beyond the status quo.
And meet extraordinary people across the world who go beyond convention to forge their own incredible journeys. My name is Giulia Salvi.
And I'm Tim Bravo.
Together, we are your hosts. And this is Beyond, a Lamborghini podcast.
Well, I think it is safe to say that as the youngest British woman to reach the top of Everest and many, many dramatic expeditions since, Bonita Norris is no stranger to grit, determination, and going beyond limits, much like we say that we are at Lamborghini. But it is also true to say that she absolutely was a stranger to mountaineering when she first embarked on her expedition to reach new heights.
With no previous experience, Bonita decided one day in 2008 to climb Mount Everest, and by taking on this extraordinary challenge, learned some extraordinary human lessons along the way.
This is absolutely incredible, and we're super happy to have you here. Welcome, Bonita. And today, you're going to be in conversation with our own Chief People, Culture and Organization Officer, Umberto Tosini. Hello, Umberto.
Hi, Tim.
You two, you're going to discuss the power of dreams, ambition, the importance of failure as well, and to drive humans beyond their limits. So, welcome again.
Welcome, both of you. Actually, dream is the key word, because you may have entirely different lives, but it could be said that you both share a simple belief. It all starts with a dream. So, when did it all start for you, Bonita? Tell me about that dream, that day in 2008.
Thank you, Giulia. I was at university, it was in 2008, and I was just sitting on my couch one evening watching TV when a friend phoned me and asked me to go to a lecture about mountaineering. And I said, why? Why would you go to that? And she said, because there will be lots of hot guys there. So to my embarrassment, I guess, I remember thinking, oh, what's the worst that can happen? And I went and saw this lecture about mountaineering, about Mount Everest. And I just thought it was the most beautiful thing I had ever heard. I thought, that's what I want to do. And the climbers described how they reached the summit of Everest and they saw the curvature of the earth beneath them. And it was like a fire ignited inside me. I knew I had to do it.
That's incredible. I think many people dream. Many people wish that they could fulfill their dreams. But many people stay at that level and don't go then to go out into the world and make that dream come true. But we at Lamborghini, Umberto, we also started with a dream of one man 61 years ago now, Ferruccio Lamborghini, that dreamt of building his own super sports cars, and so he did. So what is your role to keep that dream alive? Or how do you think that this dream still manifests itself here within our company?
This was the dream of one that was becoming a dream of many. Because even then, for example, with the generation of the Miura, this was become a dream of three young engineers that were able to make it possible for an extraordinary car that was the first one becoming the super sport car in our history and in the history of the automobile. So let's say what is really relevant to me is what moved the team together. No, what was thinking the friend of Bonita to call her and to say it's a challenge for you and even for all of us mountaineering.
Umberto, you've been at Lamborghini since 2006, and where did it all begin for you?
Well, it was beginning with the day of snow in Germany for my assessment center there. And this was really a kind of magic. All the day was going really well. It was an opportunity to me to discover a different world. At the time, I was working in the telecommunication sector. So it was a totally different business. And then I was keeping in touch with this small jewel, no, this incredible jewel of the Emilia-Romagna region. And since then, I fall in love with this idea. And since then, I've never abandoned the idea of improving the company together with my colleagues.
Bonita, what I asked Umberto before, so it starts with a dream and then you have to keep pushing. What is it that you need after dreaming? like to make that dream come true? Is it, how much is it ambition? How much is it passion, perseverance? Like what is the main quality to make a dream into a reality?
I think you've got to back yourself, because you're the only person sometimes that will believe it's possible. I had so many people, friends, loved ones, other climbers tell me, really, come on, like this is never going to happen. And if you believe them, then it will never happen. So you have to back yourself. And that includes, you know, making sacrifices and doing things that other people just won't be willing to do. I think it's everybody, as you say, has dreams, but actually making them a reality is a very different thing.
But how do you know that they're actually just blocking your dream that you can make into a reality? Or like maybe they are making a good point and it's really a, like a crazy idea that you're having. So how do you find the strength or the belief in yourself to still go on and to not say, maybe they're right a little bit. Maybe it is kind of crazy.
Yeah, well, when I was training for Everest, it wasn't just the training that was important. It was also to climb Mount Everest costs a lot of money. I was very young. And so I was trying to find a British business to sponsor me on the expedition. So it's like finding £50,000 as a 20-year-old. I had no help. I had no business experience. And everyone was saying to me, this is impossible. No one's going to give you that money. And we hope that nobody gives you that money, because you'll die if you try and climb that mountain, quite frankly.
Encouraging.
So there, everything they said was logical. It made sense. But what was driving me wasn't logic. It was passion. It was an intuition. It was a belief in something better for myself. And sometimes logic and passion, you know, they don't agree. And for me, it was just every day trying to make sure that I didn't forget about that passion. And I remembered why I started, and I listened to that fire in my belly, really, that had started with the lecture. It worked out. I got the money and I got to the mountain.
I think we all had in our lives and career those people telling us not to do it, but I'm pretty grateful to them. And what about your friend? I was wondering about her, the one who brought you to the lecture.
She was not inspired by the mountains. Maybe the other 200 people were not inspired, but for me, it was life-changing.
That was your night, yeah. Definitely. Driving beyond limits is never an easy feat, and it's rarely straightforward. Benita knows this too well. Tell us about the challenges you faced while preparing to climb Mount Everest and the challenges you faced while you were climbing it.
You can't just arrive at the bottom of Mount Everest with no experience. So I had 2 years of training. I started just climbing in the UK. We have very little mountains in the UK, up to 1,000 meters. So then I was just working whilst doing my studies, getting money together so I could fly to the Alps. I could climb in France and Switzerland and Italy and up to mountains that were 4,000 meters high. And then after that, I got stuck, because to go out to the Himalayas, where the big peaks are, is more money. I was lucky that my university actually funded my first expedition to the Himalayas, and I went there in 2009, and it was to climb the world's eighth highest peak. And that was for me the first time that I realized what was involved with Mount Everest. It's not like the European Alps, it's not like mm-hmm. England. This is a different level. The mountain that I was climbing was double the height of anything I'd ever tried before. It was such an unknown for me, going up into the death zone above 8,000 meters, where there's so little oxygen that nothing can survive up there long term. So I had no idea whether my body would adapt. I was dealing with avalanches, with this beautiful mountain, but it was also deadly. But actually, all of that was not as bad as just trying to fit into my team, because they were experts. Some of them had been climbing since before I was born. And so when I arrived, I just felt out of my depth. Every day, learning so much, making so many mistakes. And I feel so grateful to them today that they stuck with me. They didn't give up on me. They mentored me. And I got to the top of that first peak. And then 6 months later, I went to Everest. So that was the 2 years before. And then Everest itself, where do you start? It was about a month of preparation before we got to the summit. It's a beautiful mountain. I climbed it a long time ago now, nearly 15 years ago, and it was a very different setup compared to what it is today. So I feel like I was lucky to see the mountain before it became the commercial place it is now. It was the dream that I imagined when I was in my bedroom back at university. It came to life, and it was just amazing.
Umberto, how much of this resonates with you? I mean, we normal people, we have not climbed Mount Everest, but I mean, in a way, everyone climbs their own Mount Everest, no? And also in normal life, like how do you motivate yourself? How do you, as like being in charge of, in the end, of the human resources as well within this company, of the people, how do you motivate us employees at Lamborghini to climb their own Mount Everest every day?
Well, for sure, every one of us has to face challenges in his own life. And for sure, our worry is always to be sure that we are giving all the help, as Bonisa was saying before, to all our staff to make them in condition to win the challenge and even to get the chance of failing in case in a protected environment. This is crucial for the innovation that is one of our pillar of foundation. And then, by the way, because we are passionate even about our technicalities and the way of managing the whole, for sure we need to apply for methodologies that are the most innovative one, but even comfortably solid to make all of them familiar, to get them the understanding of our system and the rule of engagement. Otherwise, they for sure will get demotivated.
So you're in the company now since 2006, I believe. And what would you say has been, well, in that time, the company has more than doubled its size in terms of employees, in terms of square meters. What would you say has been your biggest challenge or the company's biggest challenge in the time that you've...
You know, as you said before, this was starting as a dream for the ones that were thinking to the company as it is today and probably growing a bit more always in the future, you know. And the basis was starting from the team, no? We together were dreaming to make this company becoming like it is today with this level of success and professionalism of everyone. Then on the other hand is a matter, as Bonita said before, even of helping everyone to fill their own a challenge into this scenario, no? To help the people to understand where they can experiment themselves and to which extent, to which limit. And I say we were successful in doing this, and it is even looking at the multifaceted role of every manager, no? To keep on one side the motivation to be human enough to help the younger one, but even to reflect on the own weak point where you are expressing your performance. So it's really a matter of looking at all these things together.
But Umberto, as you were saying before, even failure is quite important in the path to success.
You're right. For some generation in the past, this was a sort of, let's say, taboo, now to measure yourself with a failure. And this is even so evident for empiric world. Even failing 29 times, said someone, to succeed the 30th time you are trying, probably it's just a matter of considering, oh, how much time do you need? How far away you are from the final target? And for this, in my opinion, it's no matter of emphasizing the failure on a negative side, but probably to understand that this is the road to success for your goal, for your final purpose.
That's
it's
the
not
right
only
point
the scope, no, you know, but this is a different issue.
Another key success factor for sure is team or teamwork. But Bonita, I imagine you as a mountaineer being on your own often as well, especially in your mind. But how important is teamwork for you or leadership as well? as opposed to the very personal motivation that you take on your own with you in your backpack?
I think when it comes to leadership, the best leaders that I've been with in the mountains have been at base camp, and you climb and they are over the radio giving advice, looking at the weather. Because for me, it's not about somebody being in up front. It's about trust and trusting judgment. And so I don't have to be with you. If I can talk to you over the radio and I can explain what's going on and I trust your judgment, then you're still leading me, even though you're not there. And that for me was how I felt. That's where I come alive in the mountains. I don't like to have somebody too intensely kind of trying to manage the team. We're all climbers. We're all motivated. We want to be able to do things in our own way. But having guidance is important. And the big questions and the big decisions, I like to have a leader that I trust. But trust takes a really long time to build. So it's only been in the later part of my climbing career that I've found people that I really trust. And on the mountain, teamwork is really important. I think it's not so much the team work, it's just the team spirit. We're there to keep each other motivated, to give each other perspective, to try and work out problems. But, you know, as you mentioned, actually, when we're on the mountain climbing, it's all about systems and rules. You communicate in a certain way, and we're almost not like robots, but we have to climb very professionally. And there's sort of no room really to step outside those margins, because if you don't communicate well, someone will make a mistake, and you can die in the mountains if you make a mistake. So we're there for support and things like that. But as long as you know the basics of how to climb these big peaks, then yeah, I would like to think I could climb with anyone, even if I didn't like them particularly as a person. You have to be able to do that. Yeah, ideally, it's a lot more than that. It's about having a great team that motivate you.
Bonita, do you think that your teammates had some prejudice about you when you met them? Because you said that they were professionists while you were new to that.
You'd have to ask them. I'm sure that there was. We all judge. I think it's just human nature. For me, I also judged them, and but you know, being very impressed by mm-hmm. them. So I think, yeah, for me it was a really proud moment to stand on the top of mountains with them. When I had no idea if I could do it or not at the beginning, it was nice at the end to kind of stand next to them on the top.
Umberto, we have received for many years now at Lamborghini the top employer award here in Italy, which is a very prestigious recognition of a company, of the company's attitude towards its employees. How do you, how important is this to you? And how do you think as well the philosophy of leadership that we have at Lamborghini and of individual motivation influences this award?
We were choosing a top employer that then we won for the 10th time in a row. For the scope of having a frame in which we can measure our attitude for well-being of the people and even welfare and even all the enhancement of our policy in a way that could be sustainable at the same time for us and for the society around us. And the right level of professionalism is given by the experts that are behind the organization, that are auditing you in all this dimension, and in this way you can measure yourself and even foster the improvement, no? Having in mind maybe a multi-year perspective, no? To grow year by year, to add year by year, to refine something year by year, and this is really a way to climb, in a sense, no? To improve yourself, to prepare yourself, and this is a never-ending story even, because there would be always a new idea to experiment, to prove yourself, and even to put on the table for the team. No, that is a nice way to win the game.
There's always a next mountain to climb, right?
Always. Always. Even after Everest, there's no higher mountain, but there are much harder mountains, so always.
Is this how you measure performance, like always looking for the next target?
I mean, it's always, using a systematic base, how to make this evolving. But this is even talking in deep to the people, no? To their own needs to measure their improvements in a way that is clear, but at the same time, even asking you the best you have. Because at the end of the story, it's yourself the most severe judge of what you are doing.
I think performance is, you shouldn't get that confused with perfection, because as soon as you're perfect at something, you've kind of answered all those questions, you've trained, you've made those mistakes, and then you do it really perfectly. But then it's time to move on. Like, you can't just stay perfect forever, because you'll never grow. So for me, performance is about continuing to take risks, seeing progress, making mistakes, learning, most importantly. I think I have been on mountains where we have failed to get to the summit, but I've come away feeling like it was a huge success because I learned so much. And I think, okay, next time I will be back on that mountain or a different mountain, and I will have so much more knowledge. So I think performance is just about that continual desire to learn and to take risks.
Umberto, how do you find out where the limit is for an individual? Because sometimes you really have to realize that there is a limit that cannot be, you know.
Well, you know, today probably we are much more aware in the past of, the safe way of challenging the own limit of a person. Because today, we in the organization, we try to care even about the psychological well-being of the people, you know. Because otherwise, the risk is that you are pushing the people where they are not feeling sustainable, no? And even then, their failure is the fact that the others are losing confidence in the person herself or himself. So it's really a matter of being prepared and selecting all the conditions and improving all the conditions around in a way that the person could express this potential.
Well, knowing your limits is for sure very important as well when you have to make judgment calls about taking risks. One thing is to fail and not reach the mountaintop. Another thing is to fail and fall off the mountain. So this is, I think, two very different kinds of failure. So how do you evaluate in the mountaineering atmosphere? How do you evaluate the risks and know which one to take?
It's really hard, and I've done both. I've fallen off the mountain, and I've also like turned around on the mountain and regretted both, thinking, I made the wrong decision. I think ultimately sometimes you get the calls right and sometimes you don't, and it's just that continual learning. I think the most important thing is to just evaluate what happened and try and take something from it moving forward. But that judgment line that you have about, do I need to turn around, it's influenced by so many things. And of course, we train for a year and we spend every penny we have to try and get to one summit of a mountain. You might never get the chance to come back. It's so dangerous. Do you want to go through this again? But so there's so much going through your mind, but I feel like there's a line that you just understand implicitly. You can't, I need to turn around, this is over. And when that moment happens, it's just a kind of implicit feeling. It's not explicit, it's just, you know, inside that you have to go back. And it's when I've turned around before I've had that feeling, that's when I regret it. I've made my decision based on what other people were doing. Mm. Or, you know, and actually then I thought, I should have just trusted myself.
Well, I have to go back though to the fact that you fell off a mountain. So like you say, you fall off a horse and you get back up on it, right? So that's kind of, so what do you do when you fall off a mountain? You just get back up, or what is it?
I was lucky. I could stand up. I didn't have a big fall. I mean, I've fallen many times climbing, but on a mountain, this was the biggest fall I had. It was actually on Everest. We were descending from the summit. So we were tired, and I picked up a old piece of rope to pull my weight onto so that I could kind of climb down very quickly down the Hillary Step near the summit of Everest. And this rope was caught around a rock. And when I pulled my weight, the rope came loose, and I then tumbled, not fell, I sort of rolled down the mountain, and I really got kind of bashed up. And it was very, very dangerous position to be in, because we're in the death zone above 8,000 meters. The light is going, it's going to be dark soon, and oxygen, we're using supplemental oxygen, so that was also running out. And I had to get down as fast as I could, but I could barely move. So I'm, again, like, my teammates, they were with me, and they pushed me and helped me, and we got back to our summit camp. The next day it was okay. We climbed down together. But yeah, that was one of those moments where when I was trying to learn from it and look back on it, I was just thinking, maybe I should have turned back earlier. Why did I pick up that piece of rope? I should have checked it. The most important thing is just to use that experience to move forward. And that's what I try to do with every mountain since.
Wow. Let's talk about revolution, because for Lamborghini, the decision to adopt a strategy of electrification was quite revolutionary. Umberto, how did you react when you first learned about that move? And how did you react, and what was the impact on the team?
Yeah, we desire to go in this direction because all of us, we get aware of the condition around us. And then I believe the key value in this choice was how brave we were in adopting this change, and how we are caring about the acceptance of the other about this decision. Because for sure, this was not starting bottom up from our customer, but this was starting from the need of the community in a wider sense. And our strategy Core Tauri has been originated by this feeling of community, you know, to understand which is the next step for a sustainable and a great way of having performance, of amusing yourself. Maybe that we still have to cope with some of the challenges on the product, but we are totally confident that this is the right way.
So Lamborghini is in a phase of the whole industry, basically the automotive industry, of transition, transformation. How has Bonita technology revolutionized, maybe as well, or impacted mountaineering? You say you climbed Mount Everest for the first time 15 years ago. A part of it now being more touristic, as you say. How would it be different to climb it today than 15 years ago?
The most important thing is the oxygen. So the oxygen masks are always being adapted, and that's always evolving. And in fact, all of my expeditions to the 8,000 meter peaks, there's been a new system. So that's how fast it's changing. And then beyond that, it's like, how light can we go? Can we make this down suit lighter? Can we make our boots lighter, the ice axe? But you want maximum sort of warmth from all of that, and performance in terms of keeping you dry, but you also want it to be light. So it's these very small incremental changes. I would say the biggest innovation in these high mountains like Everest is the teamwork. Back in the 1920s and up to the 1950s, the way that these mountains were climbed was very different to how it's done today. Today, there's a huge network of Sherpa support and knowledge that's been built up over nearly 100 years on the mountain. So it's that today that I think makes this climb a lot more accessible to other people. It's the Sherpas and the amazing knowledge that they have of the peak.
Do you think, for both of you, that it's difficult for a team to completely rethink the fundamental principle of organization?
Yes. I think change is hard, and there will always be people that are less inclined to want to change than others. The most important thing with a team, I think, is curiosity. Is if everyone on the team can just be willing to listen, really listen, and be open to trying different things, asking curious questions, and just being willing to not be right. You know, that's the most important thing. So if you have a team of curious people, I think then, yeah, a change in that would be positive, but you know, teams aren't always perfect, and sometimes you do have to drag people with you.
Well, the challenge could be sometimes to put together the need for results, no, the timeline that you have already in mind, with the change that you have to manage, and even with the resources you are available in that moment for the scope. So at the end of the story, it's a managerial task, no, to put all this dimension together and to make it working in the way that all the people feel comfortable and at the same time, let's say, attracted, no, by this new dimension of change. In this sense, change management is probably more than a discipline, is an art.
Well, I would like to talk a little bit about gender bias, or like the stereotypes that we have, because we know that we live in, luckily, a time where gender equality is a big topic or a big goal towards which we all strive. How has this been a topic for you, Bonita? Has there been any like, do you feel that as a woman you had to fight harder for your dream to be fulfilled?
I don't. No, because I've never been a man, so I can't compare. But I will tell you, when I first went on my first ever climb indoors at an indoor climbing wall, I saw men doing pull-ups and I can't do one pull-up. So I'm thinking, well, you know, upper body strength is pretty important for climbing big mountains. Maybe I just can't do this. But actually what it made me do was become a better climber, better technique, better mind game, things like that. And actually today I feel like those skills have served me much better than just pure strength. So being a woman has made me adapt, certainly, but I think for the better. And I think that's what all women, we have to do. And that's why we are formidable.
No, that's for sure. Umberto, gender equality is also a topic for us at Lamborghini. Stereotypically, we are being perceived as 100% male, let's say, but it is not the truth. It's not the reality. So especially when you walk the offices, you see even in many teams more women than men. So how is this being dealt with here from a human resources point of view?
Let's say on one hand, it's clear that we come from a sector that traditionally is linked to a male idea of power, you know. But then this transformation is now bringing us a lot of value through diversity. And even in my opinion, the biggest challenge we have in general as society is inclusion, you know, because in this sense, everyone is diverse with his own idea, with his own way of doing things. And what is relevant to us is to make possible a teamwork from this diverse point of view to add value. Because to work in a company means to add value every day, not anymore. Not really to fix the budget or to reach the singular task in a perfect way, then forgetting all the rest. That is not the case. And diversity and the presence of women, of young generation, and all the staff are making this possible, in my opinion.
Yeah, thank you for your important words, Umberto, because we are definitely in the middle of a revolution. So examples like Lamborghini are quite important. Bonita, you are the youngest British woman that scaled Everest. What does it personally mean to you?
Well, and I have actually passed on that record now to a much younger girl, but she's lovely. in fact, three younger women, okay. all 2 years after me. I think I opened the doors for other women, and that makes me very proud. In fact, when I was climbing a mountain next to Everest, when all these women were on Mount Everest, I came down to base camp when one of them came down from the summit, and she had taken my youngest British woman record. And I was the first to greet her in base camp, and I just gave her a big hug. And I was like, "Are you?" I was like, I was so proud of her. I was so proud because we'd become friends. I had given her so much advice. We had been climbing together. I really felt like she deserved it. So to have that personal success on the top of Everest was amazing. But for me, the memory that will be with me when I'm old is that hug with her, and just passing that on and that relationship, it felt so much more special. So I feel like for me, it's always about the next challenge. Everest I've left behind. These other women can have the record, like I've moved on. And I have so many other challenges in the mountains that I would like to take on, but it's waking up in the morning. I don't wake up in the morning and think, oh, I climbed Everest, but it's that waking up every day thinking, you've got this. Like, no one's going to tell you it's impossible anymore. And I'm very grateful for that. Like, it's something that nobody can ever take away. And so it gives me a lot of inner strength.
But now you have to tell us which are your next challenges. What are you thinking? What are you planning?
I have a 5-year-old daughter and a 10-month-old son. So these challenges are in the future. But for sure, back to the mountains, an 8,000-meter peak, there's one in Tibet that I have wanted to climb for so many years. It's called Choayu. And I would love to try this mountain without using supplemental oxygen. It's deemed to be the purest form of climbing, just your own body and the mountain. And I would love that challenge.
How does your personal situation change your goals? Because if you have children, maybe how does this change risk taking as well? And a follow-up question as well, seeing that you embrace as well competition, or like even like you're proud of another climber that breaks your record. Is there any like, how competitive are you with your husband, that I believe to be also a climber? Like, who do you think is the better climber?
To answer that question first, I am the better mountaineer because he cannot acclimatize to altitude. I have tried. It does not work. So he would have no chance to go up very high. But for you know, if we're at sea level here now, he would be stronger. And he is an amazing rock climber. But he just hasn't spent as much time in the mountains, and I haven't spent as much time rock climbing. So it's hard to compare. But certainly I found it really funny when he couldn't breathe when we were sleeping in this tent. The question about risk and being a parent is just one that I have spent years of my life now thinking about, because the mountains are deadly. You have to have that respect. And I also never want my children to go through what some children have gone through, losing a parent. So I'm trying to weigh up my passion with my responsibility. And I think for all parents out there, you find that line that is okay for you. It's a different line now for me that I'm not willing to step across, which is why this challenge that I have in my mind is not as dangerous as some of the other challenges I would have done if I hadn't have had children. But it's okay to change your appetite for risk when you've had kids. It's okay to change everything about your life when you've had kids. So I embrace it. I feel like it's another challenge, another way to adapt and find new experiences. So it's not been a bad thing at all.
And you, Umberto, not talking just about your own kids, but about the 2,000, 2,500 kids that you have here at at the factory every day. How does this change your, or how does this correlate with your appetite for risk every day?
Well, you know, for sure, we feel accountable for all of them. And even this responsibility has to move you to decision when times are mature enough. By this side, we always have, as board of management of this company, very deep discussions on even on things that could seem details to the other, but we are really obsessed by the chance of keeping decision together in a responsible way, taking care of the potential of the company for the future. That at the end is link to the concept of, to the idea of adding value, creating value, that is our, let's say, our manifesto for all the actions that as corporate we put in place every day.
Well, Umberto, I think this is a perfect conclusion. So it's been lovely chatting with you, and thank you guys for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this month's episode.
New episodes will continue to land regularly on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Lamborghini.com.
Please do subscribe wherever you get your podcasts for more extraordinary journeys into the beyond. My name is Tim Bravo.
And I am Giulia Salvi, and this is Beyond, a Lamborghini podcast.